I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
So last week, we celebrated our 100th episode. We've made it through. That makes it sound bad. Made it through. We've enjoyed. Enjoyed 100 episodes.
We never thought we'd see the promised land like the Israelites in the desert, but here we are.
So on to 101, and we keep celebrating. Figured maybe something a little bit new. What's the sign, Trevor, of a great song?
It hits number one.
Well, obviously, but it can be remade. It's remade many times. So many people love it. It's that good. The people want to sing it, put their own spin on it. So we figured, want to do that with the Chartbeat Podcast theme song.
Now, you may be hearing a third voice coming through the airwaves this particular episode. There it was again. It's like a great Easter egg. That, yes, is going to be our special first guest on today's episode. Somebody in-house here at Billboard. His name is Zach Aronson. He works with the executive suite here. Also, fun fact, enjoys the talent of singing. So we want to welcome Zach, and we're going to set him up. It'll be sort of, I guess, we could call it, I don't know, podcast idol or something.
Chartbeat podcast idol.
Yes. Chartbeat podcast idol. It's a little long.
Rolls off the tongue.
Let's welcome Zach in.
Hi. Hey, I'm Zach. So happy, so excited to be here.
So, Zach, let's start at the beginning, of course. So,
yeah.
Before you sing, how did you get into singing? Have you always been singing? Did you grow up in a musical household?
I mean, since you asked it specifically that way, my mother was always a singer. She performed in vocal groups all through college, and she was in some rock bands. It's crazy. She had a whole life before me, but she's always been a really passionate singer. And, you know, I think Disney movies, obviously, were some of the first movies I ever watched, and I was so drawn to music, you know, from The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast onwards. And, you know, I feel like I started getting into the world of theater when my sister wound up going to a summer camp, and I was invited, or basically, because she was going to the camp, I might as well go along to the camp as well. And and that was back in Boston, Chestnut Hill Performing Arts Camp, I think it was called.
Are you from Boston?
Yeah.
I am too. I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Born in Boston, raised in like Brookline, Chestnut Hill.
Grandparents lived in Brookline.
Oh my gosh, mine lived in Wakefield.
But not Brooklyn, New York.
No, Brookline.
Oh, Brooklyn.
But I always love to sing. I'm super obnoxious and annoying about it sometimes. I just, you know, I'm constantly singing to myself, and obviously, you know, I decided a long time ago that I didn't want to pursue performing professionally. That's just not what I wanted. I was, you know, a little bit too shy and nervous and just not confident enough to put myself out there like that. But I've always continued to love to sing and been singing around the office since I started here because I just can't help myself. I'm like Maria Von Trapp and my heart wants to sing every song it hears. Like my, I cannot stop. Yeah. Well, it's kind of a problem.
You become sort of famous now. Whenever we have a celebration, Keith Caulfield just had his 20th anniversary at Billboard. You were singing Happy Anniversary. So I was thinking, well, I got to get him on the podcast and see how deep this talent goes.
Let's see. Let's find out.
All right. So we figured for the 100th episode, now that we're past that, onto 101, see if we can have a nice new version along with the original of the Chart Beat podcast theme song. You up for your version of it?
Yes, I would love that. I mean, how exciting would that be? Obviously, you've got such a great theme song, Gary, that you told me the story of, that you know, your friend turned it around, just her and a guitar, and sent it right over to you. And, you know, that was history 101 episodes ago. And obviously, I would want to continue.
It's right up there with the Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes. Iconic.
Right up there, yeah. With the Brady Bunch, and they'll be humming Chart
Beat. Truly iconic.
All right, let's see what you got. So Zach and Trevor and I will...
It's time for the official...
We cannot sort of underlay the theme music with this. So this is going to be an all a cappella performance.
Just a cappella.
Unfortunately, the song is not 16 bars, so we get the one line.
Well,
but,
yeah.
You
know,
put your all into it.
I will. Oh, I will. All right, let's...
Do you know the words? So do you know the words?
I
know there's a lot of lyrics to
this. Oh yeah, if you need a lyric sheet, we can provide.
It's the Chart Beat Podcast. Oh no, that was no good. But down the octave is you know, another option. It's the Chart Beat Podcast.
Well, as they do on Idol, sometimes it's okay. You know, that was good. We want to hear something else. We want to hear what else you can do. Any past hits? What else is in your songbook?
Well, you know, I did want to bring up actually because I was listening to your episode from 2 weeks ago now, where there was some discussion of Ariana Grande's new song, and there I felt a lack of appreciation of what I think is a totally brilliant song and an amazing music video. I've had it on repeat nonstop since the day it came out.
So you're going to take on Ariana Grande?
Yes. Right now, I'm in a state of mind. I want to be in like all the time. Ain't got no tears left to cry. So I'm picking it up, picking it up. I'm loving, I'm living, I'm picking it up. Picking it up, picking it up. Loving, I'm living, I'm picking it up. We vibing. Yeah, so there you go. That's a little... I think that that's a song of the summer. My other song of the summer that's way too low on the charts still is One Kiss by Dua Lipa and Calvin Harris. Oh, one kiss is all it takes. Falling in love with me. Possibilities, yeah, look like all you need. One kiss is all it takes. Falling in love with me. Possibilities, I look like all you need.
Got some soul coming out of Brookline, Massachusetts.
Wait, let me. I feel like I need to redeem myself and re-sing my like real version of the Chart Beat podcast. Okay, so it's the Chart Beat podcast. Oh,
you win the chance to record an official version, and if it sounds good, we'll mix it into rotation with the original.
Yes,
if it hits number one on the Hot 100, that's all you got to do.
How about this? Can you sing one more thing?
Yes.
We have this new hotline that people have been calling. We put a couple callers on last week. If you can, on the spot, come up with a version of just singing, 212-493-40-1. We'll make that the theme song for our hotline.
Obviously, as soon as you said the word hotline, my brain goes, I know when the hell I'm leaving. Okay, let me see this phone number again.
So it's 212-493-40-1.
Ooh, you better call the Chart Beat hotline, 212-493-4021. Yes. Went for that kind of cheesy classic commercial jingle sound to it.
All right, well, we're going to give you that golden ticket, Zach. Here's your golden ticket.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Just picture.
It's so real.
Solid gold.
All right.
I love gold.
We'll listen for you more coming up on the podcast. Get in the studio, Zach. You're wasting your talents sitting at your computer.
It's time. It's time for me to record.
All right. Coming up on the podcast, we're going to get into Camila Cabello's Havana this week, deconstructed by our friends over at Hit Songs Deconstructed. They have really dug in at everything, the compositional characteristics as to why the song became so popular, what helped get it to number one on the Hot 100. So that's coming up. And we'll flashback to Billboard Music Awards or Sunday night. And Trevor, maybe this artist, maybe the biggest draw coming up Sunday night that we're going to flashback to.
Ooh.
Stay tuned. We'll find out.
All right. Right now, as always, this week's Top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Breath.
Number 9.
Heard it, darling, you look perfect tonight.
Number 8. Number 7.
And I'm out here with the 703 I5s, look alive, look alive. Niggas came up on this side, now they on the other side. Oh well, fuck them, dawg. We gon' see how hard they
roll. Why don't you just meet me in the middle?
Number 6.
I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me in the middle?
It's meant to be, it'll be, baby, if it's meant to be.
Number 5.
Well, come on, ride.
Psycho, little mama bad like Michael. Can't really trust nobody with all this jewelry on you. My roof look like a no-show. Got diamonds by the bolo. Don't act like you my friend when I'm rolling through my hands.
God's plan, God's plan.
Number 3.
I hold back, sometimes I won't, yeah. I feel good, sometimes I don't, hey, I finesse down Western Road, hey.
Really piping up on these niggas, you gotta be nice for what to these niggas, I understand. You got a 100 bands, you got a baby Benz, you got some bad friends, high school pics, you was even bad then, you ain't stressing.
This is America, don't got you slipping up.
And number 1.
Look how I'm living up, police be tripping up, yeah, this is America, guns in my area, I got the strap.
Hooray, your long national nightmare is over if you are not a Drake fan, because there's a new number one this week on the Billboard Hot 100, and it is, for the first time in 15 weeks, not a song by Drake. Childish Gambino taking over the top spot this week with the song This Is America. I mean, again, just one of those crazy examples that we've seen recently of a song that really just comes out of left field to take over the chart in just a span of 1 week. Obviously, if you saw This Is America, you probably heard of it through the video. Obviously, I don't want to say an homage, because it's not really an homage, but I guess just ripe with symbolism and meaning and inspiration, certainly relevant to the black experience. That just got, I mean, the video itself, of course, blew up. There was so much reaction and response and critique and thoughts about the video, which also helps the video then blow up because people, you know, try to dissect it. I know so many people who saw it 5, 6, 7 times to have to really dive into it. And so the video doing a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of getting the song to number one. Streams in particular were huge for the song, pulling about 65 million for the week. In comparison, if folks want a sort of a benchmark, when Adele's Hello came out, that got about 61 million in its first week. Obviously, streaming has continued to bloom over those past couple of years, right. But still, to be on that Adele level, you know, your first week out for an artist who certainly, you know, did not have the mainstream sort of recognition clout of Adele at that time, this is a huge accomplishment for him.
Yeah, did it surprise you, Trevor? Because I feel like we've all kind of followed his career arc over the past few years. I remember he was on Girls for just a couple episodes. I think that was my first time I noticed him. But yeah, just didn't seem like necessarily it was going to be number one debut when you thought about it. Then we started to see the building numbers early on, and we thought, wow, this could go straight to number one.
It's a little twofold, because I wonder, on one end, you know, obviously the video doing so much of the lifting, I wonder how people interacted with the song. I mean, it was number one, you know, on Spotify for the past week or so, so people have been playing it, interacting. I'm curious sort of what the long-term effect will be, if people will remember the song, if people can, like, even hum it or know how it goes. But in terms of getting to number one, I mean, it's one of those things where Donald Glover, who also is Childish Gambino, in case you did not know that, they are one and the same person. You know, in the past 18 months, I mean, his star has really exploded. We saw him take home historic wins at the Emmys last year, winning some Golden Globes as well for the TV show Atlanta that he does. And then I think one thing that really surprised a lot of people in the music field was the album Awaken My Love that he had eligible for the last Grammy cycle was up for some of the biggest awards of the night. It was up for Album of the Year. The song Redbone was also up for some of the major general categories. So even though Bruno Mars swept, just to get that recognition from somebody who had not been, you know, a major player. I mean, remember, Ed Sheeran was not nominated for Album of the Year. So one of those spots that people thought may have, you know, deserved, that Ed deserved, you know, Childish Gambino is in that conversation and Ed Sheeran's not. So coming out of it, I mean, this is 18 months ago, this would have been a different conversation and, you know, maybe had no chance for number one. But, you know, when you take the whole clout of what he's accomplished in the past year and a half, I mean, people obviously love the guy. They're excited for him. They say this will be his last album, so maybe that puts some more momentum behind it. Having a socially conscious video at a time when a lot of the social media platforms are ripe for sharing that. You know, it's not just willy-nilly kind of, hey, this is what I'm doing today, check in. I mean, having that at the right moment plays a huge part. So no, I mean, when you add all those elements together, this is the song, one of those songs that is not surprising it hit number one, because it hit number one in the right
moment. Right. Yeah, it was kind of interesting how he really, I think he hits a lot of different audiences. He joked, but there was truth behind it when he said, when he was hosting Saturday Night Live, he said, if, you know, you might know me from Star Wars and some of the other things he's done, he said, if you're black, you know me from Atlanta, which was kind of a joke that maybe some audiences watch that, some movies. So he really maybe has a bigger audience than you might have expected. So when you look at it that way, yeah, maybe not much of a surprise.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, especially when you sort of divide yourself into Donald Glover and Childish Gambino. I mean, there's, even though obviously you're the same person, in a weird way, maybe it allows you to experiment and spread more in those different personas rather than, and people, I don't know if people even necessarily think of those people as the same person. You know, like if you see Rihanna, for example, acting in a movie, you know it's like Rihanna the singer acting.
Right.
But I guess because he's kind of come up at the same time in both dimensions, maybe people don't think of, like, oh, this is the guy I'm watching on screen is the same person who put out Redbone. I don't think people maybe necessarily, like, make that instant connection in a way that they do with other, you know, people who both act and sing.
I was going to say, is it just because of the different name or because he's doing all this at once? Like, you think of Drake or Timberlake at this point, and yeah, they were more child actors. They're not really acting now, so maybe you're able to separate those a little bit more easily?
Maybe, and I guess, I mean, I'm not 100% sure about, so I may be wrong about this, but also, you know, a lot of those people who I guess start off as singers and go into acting, then they turn around and do all these soundtrack songs. So it's a little hard to differentiate the singer from the actor when it comes to some of these projects. I mean,
right.
I mean, if you look at somebody like Whitney Houston, who plays a singer in her biggest film, it's like, okay, it's a little hard for me to, you know, to think, you know, the Whitney Houston actress versus Whitney Houston singer if I'm hearing Whitney Houston songs every 30 minutes in this movie. So maybe, and I know people who think obviously the dual name thing is kind of weird, but maybe
that helps.
Maybe that benefits in a way that, and maybe it's not alienating in the way people think it would be, or confusing for your brand, or, you know, people aren't going to know you the same way.
So if you want to be more than just a podcaster, you just need another name, Trevor. You can go do whatever you want.
Yeah, I guess I can be Trevor Anderson on the airwaves, and I don't know what would be a good name for my R&B album.
I was going to say Childish. could work, but it's already tick.
All right, so Gary set up this whole discussion just to land that burn. And we'll give it to him. We'll give it to him. We'll let him have it.
All right. So that's this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. Not in the top 10, although Camila Cabello is with Never Be the Same, her previous hit, Havana, as we mentioned, week at number one in January. And our friends over at Hit Songs Deconstructed, as they always do, as they've done on the podcast here before, totally dug into what's behind the song, what specifically made it a hit in terms of its composition, its songwriting, its production, everything about it, like no one else can do. Dave and Yael Penn deconstructed Havana, and we're going to look at it now. What made? Obviously, it's a catchy song, but we're going to find out. It's even more than that, some of the elements that went into the song. Why Havana became such a huge hit on the Hot 100, deconstructed right now on the Billboard Sharpie Podcast.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Dave and Yael Penn of Hit Songs Deconstructed, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us, Gary.
Great, Trevor, to be here.
So it was actually funny. Recently, Dave, when there were all these debuts recently in the Hot 100, top 10.
Yeah.
J. Cole had three a couple weeks ago. Ariana Grande, we had four debuts in the top 10 for the first time ever. Post Malone just debuted.
Yeah.
And you guys, the core of Hit Songs Deconstructed is you analyze top 10s on the Hot 100. So I guess it's either congratulations or sorry for all the extra work.
Very, very busy.
Yeah. Yep.
So, good for work. But
yeah, it was a busy couple of weeks. Yeah. But all good. All
right. So we're going back a little bit to a song that was in the top 10 for a long time, a week at number one in January. One of the, in some ways, I know we're going to bring up the word Hookfest. It's going to come up in this one, right?
Absolutely.
We're going
Havana
to,
una na.
We're going to Havana. With, it's actually interesting. I was reading some of the intro that you guys have on Hit Songs Deconstructed, saying how up front you even say that Camila herself really didn't expect the song to become a hit. And sometimes the biggest hits, even at the beginning, it might seem so obvious, but no one thought this was going to be a hit on her side.
Sometimes it's going against the grain and really going with your gut feeling. And, you know, if the song is really solid, as this one is, you can really have great results. And this is, you know, proof in the pudding.
All right, so you're going to take us into, as only you guys can do, really going a deep dive on really why Havana has been in everyone's head for months and why it was such a huge hit on the Hot 100.
Absolutely. Let's get into it. So Havana entered the Hot 100 in the fourth quarter of 2017. There are two artists on the song, Camila Cabello, who's the primary artist, and Young Thug, a rapper, who's the featured artist. It hit number one on over 30 charts throughout the world, including the Billboard Hot 100. It was written by a team of 10 songwriters, including Ellie Tamposi, Andrew Watt, Brandon Perry, Brian Lee, Camila Cabello, Frank Dukes, Jeffrey Williams, Louis Bell, Pharrell Williams, and Starra. lots of cooks in the kitchen.
I think that's one of the things that's sort of been forgotten a little bit, and how big this song was, that Pharrell was part of the song.
Yeah. A lot of great songwriters on that song. And it was produced by Frank Dukes. And he's produced for a host of artists, including Bebe Rexha, Lorde, Frank Ocean, Post Malone, Nicki Minaj, Drake. List goes on and on. Yeah. So what we'll do is check out some of Havana's core strengths, and then we'll go section by section to hear how the song unfolds. Now, one of Havana's key strengths is that it capitalized on some of today's hottest trends while also possessing atypical qualities that helped it stand out from the pack. On the trend capitalization side, its three main influences, hip-hop, trap, and R&B, were the three most popular influences found in the Hot 100 Top 10 in 2017. So they, along with the incorporation of the hot new trend on the rise, which is Latin, especially thanks to the massive success of Despacito, enabled Havana to connect with a wide audience and succeed on each of their respective charts, which includes the U.S. Billboard U.S. Mainstream Top 40 chart, U.S. Rhythmic chart, and U.S. Latin Pop Songs chart, where Havana hit number one on each. Now, not only were hip-hop, trap, and R&B the most popular in the overall Hot 100 Top 10, but they were also very popular among exclusively pop songs as well, where they played a role in 40 to 60% of songs in 2017.
Okay, can we ask a question there?
Please.
Just, I'm sure some people might be wondering, okay, so a pop song is built upon hip-hop, trap, and R&B. And you can obviously hear, I think, some of the hip-hop influence there. When you say the song is built on an R&B base, what elements of the song in particular
primarily
would you say?
The characteristics of her vocal delivery.
Okay.
Yes.
So more vocal than instrumentation.
Yeah, so when we're looking at all these different influences in the song, we're looking at a wealth of characteristics. So we're looking at the instrumentation, we're looking at vocal characteristics, even lyrics, to make a determination on what influences are playing different types of roles and different degrees of prominence to shape the sound and vibe of the song.
Okay.
Havana was also in tune with trends pertaining to tempo, key, and vocal delivery in 2017. The 100 to 109 beat per minute range, minor keys, and a combination of sung and rap vocals were the most popular in the top 10. Now, on the flip side, one of Havana's characteristics that really enabled it to stand out among its contemporaries was his choice of instruments, namely trumpet and a brass section, both of which are quite rare in the top 10. In 2017, only 2 to 3% of all songs utilized either of these instruments in the mix. Trivia time. You ready? Before Havana, what was the last Hot 100 Top 10 hit to feature trumpet in a prominent hook-based manner? I'll give you a hint. Go back to December of 2015.
At the end of 2015, let's see, that was the year.
That was Adele and Bieber.
Was Love Yourself? Did it have trumpets in it?
Something you should go and love yourself.
That's right.
Now, another instrument that helped Havana to stand out is acoustic piano. Now, while acoustic piano isn't as rare as brass, it was utilized in 38% of top 10 hits in 2017, only a small handful feature it as a main accompaniment element as Havana does. Among them are diverse hits such as Humble, Million Reasons, Sign of the Times, and Too Good at Goodbyes. On the influence side, as much as Latin helped Havana capitalize on the hot emerging trend, it also helped it to stand out among its contemporaries, considering that only 6% of all top 10 hits in 2017 featured a Latin influence. They include Despacito, Mi Gente, Wild Thoughts, and most recently, Cardi B's I Like It in Q2. Another one of Havana's core strengths is its choice of featured artist, in this case, rapper Young Thug. Not only does his addition bolster the song's hip-hop influence and enable it to capitalize on the popularity of hip-hop in the mainstream, but it also provides the narrative with a heightened degree of authenticity through his portrayal of the bad boy antagonist, Jeffrey, which also happens to be Young Thug's real name. And speaking of authenticity, the protagonist in the narrative is from Havana, which happens to be the birthplace of Camila Cabello. So it's really effective how qualities of the actual performing artists are woven into the fabric of the song. And another plus about having Young Thug as the featured artist, as opposed to a more household name like Jay-Z, for example, is that he doesn't overshadow Cabello and impede the goal of establishing her as a major solo artist since leaving Fifth Harmony. Now, arguably the key components that really helped Havana turn into a major hit is its hooks. and the methodical and clever manner that they're woven into the song. At the heart of Havana is the Nensen's Nah Hook, which, as you probably know, Nah Hooks have played a key role in some of popular music's biggest hits. So Havana is now part of the Nah Number One Hit Club. Now, considering that the lyric Nah appears 75 times throughout the song, it's reinforced with a variety of melodic and lyrical change-ups, which helps to keep it sounding fresh and prevent it from becoming overly redundant. But the writers didn't stop at Nah. They included another infectious nonsense vocal hook in the pre-chorus, which is cleverly reinforced in an instrumental manner, both in the instrumental break and the outro sections, as you'll hear in just a bit. So now let's go through each section in the song and spotlight some key highlights as we go along. Havana begins with a 9-second 4-bar intro as the shortest section in the entire song. So it goes on the premise of hooking the listener in and getting on with it ASAP, which, as you could gather, is a really good practice considering the instant gratification society in which we live. It features the sparsest arrangement in the entire song. There's just a vocal shout and two instruments in the mix, acoustic piano and claps. The pattern and timbre of the acoustic piano establishes the song's traditional Latin vibe and also functions as a unique identifier for the song. So as soon as the listener hears those opening chords, there's no mistaking it for something else. So it easily cuts through airwave clutter and grabs the listener's attention. And then there's the electronic claps, and they provide the rhythmic foundation, establish a contemporary vibe against the traditional characteristics of the piano, and hint at the song's hip-hop influence, which becomes more prominent as the song progresses. Hey. Following the intro, and just 4% of the way into the song, we get to the first chorus, not the first verse, which is typically the case with most Hot 100 Top 10 hits. But as you could gather, kicking off with the chorus is a really effective way to begin, especially if the chorus is really strong, which is certainly the case with Havana. Now, the real strength of the section is no doubt the vocal melody. It's meticulously crafted with an effective blend of repetition and contrast to ensure that the melody gets completely ingrained in the listener's head without becoming overly redundant. So let's go line by line so you can really hear how well the melody is constructed. The section begins with the establishment of the song title hook on line one, Havana Una Na.
Havana Una Na.
So a really clever spin on the time-tested Na hook. Now line two concludes with Havana Una Na from line one, but it introduces a new melodic part before it, which helps to keep things sounding fresh.
Half of my heart is in Havana Una Na.
Line three that follows possesses the same exact melody as line two, but features different lyrics, which again helps to prevent things from becoming overly redundant.
He took me back to East Atlanta, na, na, na.
Lines four and five begin in a similar manner as lines two and three, but omit the na lyrics at the end. So again, this provides variation while concurrently reinforcing the melody with the listener. Here's line four.
Oh, but my heart is in Havana. There's something.
And the section concludes in a similar manner as it began with another iteration of the song-defining Havana Una Na hook. But this time around, it features a slightly differentiated melody.
Havana Una Na.
So now let's listen to the entire chorus straight through to hear how it all comes together.
Havana Una Na.
Hey.
Half of my heart is in Havana Una Na.
Hey.
He took me back to East Atlanta.
You know what's interesting, Dave, is some songs that start with the chorus, it feels like it kind of hits you over the head. Mm-hmm. With this song, it just kind of feels like I never really thought, oh, right, it starts with the chorus. It feels so interwoven into the flow of the song.
It's just organic.
Yeah.
It's a very organic flow in this song. And that's really one of the things that really helped this song succeed, in my opinion. It just, it doesn't feel manufactured or contrived. It's just
right.
Very nice, even flow throughout the song, like you put it. Yeah. So following the chorus, and 13% of the way into the song, we get to the first verse. couple of key things to listen for here are the introduction of the kick and bass, which provides the section with a more intense vibe compared to the preceding chorus, while bolstering the song's hip-hop and trap influences, and the call-and-response flow between the lead and background vocals, which provides the section with a really infectious quality. And as you listen, keep an ear out for the similarities and differences in the lead and background vocals from line to line, which reinforces the melody while preventing the section from becoming overly redundant.
No, no. He didn't walk up with that, how you doing? When he came in, he said there's a lot of girls I can do it, but I can't with them. I knew him forever in a minute. Hey. That's all my night. And Papa says he got Milo in him. He got me feeling like, ooh.
So it's actually the response in the call and response that doesn't change melodically, so that actually serves as the familiar anchor throughout the entire session, while you have these slight variations in the lead vocal. So that's why, again, reinforcing with a little differentiation to keep it engaging, while at the same time anchoring that into the listener's head. Now, 1/5 of the way into the song, we get to the pre-chorus. And the highlight of this section is the vibrant and infectious nonsense vocal that cleverly conveys the way that the antagonist makes the protagonist feel without the need for words. And it's also providing Cabello with an opportunity to really show off her vocal chops. Now, in the last measure of the pre-chorus, the full accompaniment is pulled in conjunction with the addition of the high-intensity and infectious Oh Na 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 vocal. And this heightens tension and anticipation leading into the ensuing chorus, while enabling it to hit with increased perceived impact once the full accompaniment is reinstated at the beginning of the section.
He got me feeling like, ooh.
Really engaging lead-in to that chorus that time. Now, at just about 1/3 of the way into the song, we get to the second chorus, which is very similar to the first. And this is important in order to get the main payoff ingrained in the listener's head. But there are a few notable differences as well, which helps to keep things sounding fresh without impeding memorability. There's a minor lyrical change-up that takes place, and this is really atypical when it comes to chart-topping hits. Most songs keep the same lyrics between choruses. There's additional instruments in the mix, which provides this chorus with a fuller, more powerful quality compared to the preceding sections. A brass section plays a riff in the last measure, which bolsters the authentic Latin vibe. And a male nonsense background vocal is sung over Cabello's lead, which provides the section with a heightened degree of color as well as engaging contrast against the first chorus in the song.
Oh, na, 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 na. Havana, oh, na, na. Hey. Half of my heart.
Now, at 39% of the way into the song, we get to the second verse, where a really pronounced shift takes place. It's the only section that features Young Thug and not Cabello. It conveys the narrative from the antagonist's point of view, as opposed to the protagonist. And it features pronounced change-ups in both the vocals and accompaniment compared to the other sections in the song. Now, it's also the longest section in the song, clocking in at 16 bars as opposed to 4 or 8. So in order to help keep things engaging, aspects of the vocals and the accompaniment change from stanza to stanza. Some things to keep an ear out for as we listen are the changed-up piano in the first stanza, which heightens engagement and provides the antagonist with a unique texture in the scope of the song. The speeding up of the vocals from stanza to stanza, which creates more excitement as the session progresses. The lines in each stanza concluding with the same four-note lead vocal melody, which heightens memorability against the other vocal differences. Change-ups in melodic direction across each stanza, from ascending to monotone to descending, which creates a highly engaging flow. And lastly, change-ups in the accompaniment, which provides dynamic variety throughout the section. So here's the first stanza, and really pay attention to the difference now in the piano at the beginning.
Jeffrey, just graduated fresh on campus. Fresh out East Atlanta with no mountains. Damn, fresh out East Atlanta. Up on board like a traffic jam. Yeah. I was quick to pay that girl.
girl like Uncle Sam. Here you go,
hey. So that really does a great job of having, you know, this differentiated section really stand out and enabling the antagonist in the narrative to really have his own unique setting within the narrative as well. Very clever.
One of the ways I knew the song had just become so huge pop culture-wise is I heard Havana on an AC station in Boston, Magic 106.7. Mm. Generally, AC stations always remove the rap first. They played it.
Yep.
It's such a part of the song. It doesn't feel, again, that flow of the song,
it
feels natural.
Yeah. It's just, again, natural, organic. It just totally works.
Yeah.
So here's the second stanza. So again, pay attention to the vocals kind of speeding up a little bit here. And also it reverts back to the main piano that we heard earlier in the song. So it's, you know, providing it with a more intense kind of quality. Now, in the third stanza, the accompaniment thins out a little bit, so it's providing some dynamic variety, but we also have more of a speeding up of the vocals, which is creating more excitement at the same time.
This is history in the making, homie. Point blank, close range, that beat. If it goes a million, that's me. I was getting moolah, baby.
And also a really cool call and response going on there as well. It's very interesting how they, you know, splice these vocal clips together. It's great. It's really dynamic and interesting kind of vocal flow. Now, 56% of the way into the song, we get to the third chorus. Features the same characteristics as chorus 2, except for some additional background vocals, which prevents it from coming across in a cookie cutter type manner.
In Moolah, baby.
Havana, Unana. Hey. Half of my heart is in Havana.
Now, two-thirds of the way into the song, we get to the bridge. And the highlight of this section is the engaging three-way vocal hook pairing between two na-hook variations and the proper Take Me Back, Back, Back vocal, which advances the narrative in a hook-based manner. So it's the only place so far where she's saying that she wants to go back to Havana. She wasn't saying that before. So a lot of repetition going on there, but you have those vocal embellishments in the background, which helps to keep it from becoming overly monotonous. Now, at three quarters of the way into the song, we get to the instrumental break. The first half of the section features a trumpet playing the nonsense vocal hook melody from the pre-chorus, which cleverly reinforces that melody in a fresh manner while bolstering the song's traditional Latin vibe. And the second half of the section, Cabello returns and sings that melody in tandem with the trumpet, giving the listener a hook double dose as the song heads into the fourth and final chorus. So really clever hook reinforcement there. You had it in the pre-chorus vocally. You do a very similar thing in the instrumental break. And then you kind of tie it all together with her coming in and singing that in tandem with the trumpet. And because it's conveyed by a trumpet, it's really standing out because you don't typically hear a trumpet in a mainstream hit. 82% of the way into the song, we get to the last chorus. And the main difference between this chorus and the other choruses is that it keeps the trumpet from the preceding instrumental break in effect, which provides this chorus with a more intense quality and a fresh twist without impeding memorability. But one thing to note about the trumpet is that it's riffing as opposed to playing the main hook melody, and this is important for two key reasons. It provides the listener with a necessary respite from the main hook melody, considering that it's also featured in the outro that follows. And by not using that melody, it allows for the chorus vocal to remain the focal point of the section and get further ingrained in the listener's head. If both were in effect concurrently, the listener's attention would be split and as a result not fully absorb the full essence of the chorus.
He took me back to East Atlanta.
So it's really just creating more excitement and passion within the section, driving with a whole, you know, Latin kind of theme, but it's not reinforcing that hook, which comes in later. So 91% of the way into the song, we get to the very last section, which is the outro. And the outro utilizes something that Wheat Hit Songs deconstructed called the Grand Finale Hook Fest technique. And this is where some of the most infectious material from other sections in the song are repurposed in the outro to leave the listener on an excited and memorable high. So the material in Havana's outro comes from three sections. The bridge provides the nah vocal hook, which repeats four times within the section. The instrumental break provides the trumpet hook, which again is based on the pre-chorus vocal hook melody. And this hook is also repeated four times. And the chorus provides the core accompaniment, which keeps the energy level at a high, coupled with the Havana Una Na title hook, which brings the song to a conclusion just as it began. And if you notice, at the very end of the song, the accompaniment is pulled once again to enable that title to stand out one last time and really connect with the listener.
I love that term, the grand finale.
That's what it is. Hook fest. The grand finale hook fest.
That's kind of what when you guys were here a few months ago. Same thing pretty much about Ed Sheeran's Shape of You, right? Mm-hmm. You take all these hooks and just put them all together at the end. Leave the listener just hearing all these hooks at once.
It's a very powerful technique. So it's basically just taking all the key infectious elements and like, here it is one more time for the listener to really, you know, get that ingrained in your head and leave you on an excited high. But the way that they do it, it doesn't seem like everything's out of place. Everything just connects perfectly and just ties into the song as a whole. It's great.
And it really is like the way you construct a building. You start with these layers and you just keep building it up and you have more hooks and you get to these higher levels.
Yeah, you add, you remove, you add, remove, and you just keep that engaging thing while reinforcing everything with the listener. Yeah, absolutely. Una na indeed. Great song. But I just wanted to say one more thing that, as we, you know, spoke about before, the, you know, forget about all the hooks and everything for one second. It's that organic quality about the song and the way that Cabello really connected with it. It's just natural. And you could tell that she's like really into it and expressing everything throughout the song. You know, where maybe other songs for other artists, you know, they're written by other songwriters, but they don't connect with the essence of the artist, so you never really buy into it. You don't get that gut feeling.
Right.
With this song, you do. And I think that's one of the main reasons why it became a hit as well.
Right, with her being from Havana. Has that personal connection.
Exactly.
I think part of it, too, is just the lyrics. I think just on an emotional level, people hear, my heart is in a certain place. You kind of equate it to maybe there's a place where you always kind of go back to mentally. I think everyone kind of takes that.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, you know, it's that universal connection with an audience, but also containing specifics, which provides the narrative with more depth. And it's the effective blend of the two, which really creates a very engaging narrative. Yeah.
And I guess next up now, Never Be the Same. Camila just hit the top 10. You could do a follow-up here.
Yep, that could be, but we have to do some variety with Deconstruction. So
Camila Deconstructed.
Next one, I believe, will be The Middle.
The Middle.
I'm pretty sure we're doing that one.
All right, this is great, as always, Dave and Yael. Thank you so much.
Pleasure as always.
Back, of course. We'll have you back next week, too, because we're going to go even deeper beyond Camila into trends that have been in the top 10 of the
Looking
Hot 100
to it.
Q1 2018.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you.
See you soon.
Like a moth to a flame burned by the fire. My love is blind. Can't you see my desire? That's the way love goes.
And to wrap things up this week, remember this Sunday, May 20th, going to be the Billboard Music Awards on NBC this year. So be sure to tune in for that. As part of the celebration, we're going to be honoring one of the great pop divas of all time with our Icon Award. That is the one, the only, Miss Janet Jackson. And conveniently enough for us, actually 25 years ago this week, quarter century, probably hard to believe, Janet was enjoying the start of a number one run. That is That's the Way Love Goes. All right, so this song, obviously a huge game changer in Janet Jackson's career. Maybe the first time people heard her, you know, in a really sultry, sexy kind of way. This introduced the album Janet in 1993, also a blockbuster set. If you remember, if you know anything about the Janet album, you probably may have seen the cover, which is a cropped version of that famous Rolling Stone picture. If you don't, there's only one really famous Janet Jackson Rolling Stone picture. If you don't know what it is, yeah, there's nothing graphic about it. They were, you know, it's controlled, it's smart, sexy. But the crop shot of that, and of course the songs in the album are a lot of them adult themed.
Yeah, this is the first time we'd heard from her after the Rhythm Nation 1814. Album, and it had been 3 years, and I feel like in some ways R&B hip-hop changed a little bit just between 89 and 93. Rap really exploded and went more mainstream. Hip-hop got even bigger, so you know, if you were expecting sort of that New Jack swing sound of I Miss You Much, Rhythm Nation, obviously she had to evolve for 1993, and she really did on this song.
Yeah, I mean, this song in particular, it's got that slow groove, still the same architects. I mean, Janet, obviously forever linked with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, who helped mastermind this song as well. Also, if you have seen the music video, you'll know that there is a young Jennifer Lopez as one of the background performers at that time, just before she was getting her own start. So
you're just going to keep plugging Billboard Music Awards every way you can.
Yeah, J-Lo's going to be there. Maybe J-Lo will find her way into the background and Janet does this song. She does a little medley. But also, you know, in larger context about this song being the biggest hit of Janet's career, I just wanted to run through a few of the major milestones of Janet Jackson. One of the reasons that we're giving her the Icon Award, because she obviously has set so many Billboard records. And of course, you know, being the sibling of Michael Jackson, that is not an easy task to do. But some of the big things that Janet has done in her career that are leading her up to this, if we want to start at the beginning, probably one of her most famous accomplishments is having 7 top 5 singles off that Rhythm Nation album that Gary mentioned. A few other albums have had 7 top 10 singles, and really it's just 2. Michael Jackson's Thriller and Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, but nobody able to get them all into the top 5. Except for Janet Jackson. So I'm sorry, just on her really her 4th album, but her 2nd big album.
And chart fans will know too that it could have been 8 if State of the World had been an official single. It was just a radio single, so it wasn't at the time eligible for the Hot 100, but it was a big hit on the Radio Songs chart. So if that had been a commercial single, even so deep into its run, maybe she would have had 8. We'll never know, but still another huge hit from the album.
Yeah, I mean, most people can't even get, you know, 7 singles alone, and just have 7 and have them all be hits.
Right.
I mean, that is wild.
And a couple number 2s in that, too. Rhythm Nation and Come Back to Me, almost more number 1s, both stopped at number 2.
Yeah, and of course, not just that. 4 songs did go all the way to number 1. So right. You're talking 6 top 2 hits off of 1 album. And that wasn't her only album that was stacked with several hits. The album before, Control, which was her breakthrough in 1986, also powering 5 top 10 singles on the Hot 100. Some of her best known cuts, What Have You Done For Me Lately, Nasty, Control, all those becoming top 10 hits. Her first number 1 as well, the song When I Think of You. Janet having 10 number 1s on the Hot 100 to date. And then if you look at the Janet album itself, the one that has That's the Way Love Goes on it, 6 more top 10s on that count, which is just an astonishing to have 3 albums have at least 5 top 10s in a row. I mean, for people who weren't alive at the time or maybe weren't, you know, into pop music, I mean, that right there just tells you sort of what a stranglehold Janet Jackson had. Just, I mean, it must have felt like, not incessant in a bad way, but just hit after hit with the videos. I mean, things lasting so long. Gary, Gary was around at the time.
Yes, let's go way back.
I assume he was conscious of what was going on in pop music. What did it feel like? You know, especially, I know people always will say, you know, in the shadow of Michael, it was this and that. But Janet seems like much more the more consistent presence on the scene in those
that decade.
Yeah, well, for me, it's interesting. I got into music in around spring, summer, 1988, and that's when Janet was between albums. So I had a whole year before I kind of even knew who Janet Jackson was. So then she came back with Miss You Much in 1989, and I remember kind of thinking, I got this huge response, went right to number one, and I just hadn't been conscious, really, of all the success of Control. So it kind of hit me, wow, she's absolutely on that superstar level that there's this kind of buzz for. And yeah, then she was just in that level of Madonna, some of the biggest stars for the next few years. She, as you're saying, pretty much nonstop with the hit singles at that point. And, you know, that was kind of at a time after Bad for Michael Jackson, where, you know, he had the Dangerous album in 91, but it didn't quite reach the same heights as Bad had before then and what Janet was hitting then. So she wasn't in the shadow, to me, of Michael Jackson at all at that point. She was the bigger Jackson at that point.
Ooh, she was the... Y'all heard it here first.
28 years back, hot take on that.
Yeah, backdated hot take. But one thing for sure that Janet Jackson eclipsed everybody in, I think this was kind of amazing. If you add up that run of top 10 hits that she had, beginning with Miss You Much in 1989, get this, every song that Janet Jackson put on the Hot 100 between 1989 and 1998... So we're talking almost a decade worth of hits. Every song was a top 10 hit. That's 18 songs in a row. No breaks, no misses, no interruptions, no dreaded number 11s. Everything got to the top 10. And you think about an artist who can sustain that over a period of almost a decade. And you think about, I mean, obviously the competition was huge. I mean, I'm sure Whitney, Mariah, Paula Abdul, but not even just, you know, in your genre. I mean, the different sounds, you're surviving... You're surviving, you know, obviously pop and R&B, when grunge and rock takes over in a big way, when hip-hop comes through. Throughout all of that, Janet Jackson remained constant.
Sure. You listen to something like Together Again, which was more in that 90s, late 90s dance pop kind of vibe. She moved with the times, and no one has that kind of run. Same thing with Madonna, unless you change your production style and keep up with current sounds.
And one caveat, I know maybe some of the big Janet Jackson fans will know, if you actually look at what song stopped it, it was a Shaggy song featuring Janet Jackson. So if you actually go with Janet Jackson lead songs, that streak actually goes all the way until 2001. So, I mean, this is just somebody who has, like Gary said, just evolved with the times, transcended, found ways to incorporate new styles, and above all that, just remain on top.
So if you take that one song out from that collaboration nature, you're talking 80s, 90s, into the 2000s. Three decades you're talking about. Sounds like an icon to me.
That, yeah. Sounds like an icon to all of us. And that is why Janet Jackson, this Sunday, May 20th, going to get that awesome honor of being the Billboard Music Awards Icon Award. Word on the street is she'll be performing some of her big hits in a medley. So some of those big songs, some of those 18 top 10s in a row, hopefully going to make an appearance. And for the kids at home who may not know too much about Janet Jackson, especially sort of in the post-Super Bowl landscape, hopefully they get a good shot at seeing why she is so deserving of what she's accomplished. And why we're calling her an icon.
For younger people like you who weren't born when that started.
I got an appreciation for it, but maybe some of the uneducated in my age group will get an education that night.
All right. So Janet Jackson coming up with so many others on the Billboard Music Awards Sunday night on NBC. So that'll be great to watch Sunday. And yeah, we'll be back next week here on the Billboard Sharpie podcast. Hit Songs Deconstructed, as we said, they're coming back next week. We're going to look at more trends from the first part of 2018. So beyond just Havana, which we deconstructed this week, the other trends in the production, songwriting, artist breakdowns, male, female groups, and solo art, so much more. We'll dig into all that next week on the podcast. And our hotline, by the way, 212-493-40-1. Premiered it last week with a couple of great questions. I know we already have another voicemail, at least, Trevor. We'll get to a question about Camila Cabello next week. We'll answer that. So keep calling at 212-493-40-1. Or I could say it like this.
Ooh, you better call the Chartbeat hotline, 212-493-4021.
Which is sounds even better.
And of course, we'll keep an eye on the top of the charts, see if Childish Gambino can hold on after this monster first week, or if Drake is having his eye back on that number one spot. Of course, we're getting close to that Memorial Day, so the Song of the Summer contest about to be heating up, and it seems like those two artists are going to be the first challengers as well. New song by Selena Gomez out as well, so we'll see how that impacts the chart race going forward.
So, Janet Jackson, feels like we should close with Janet this week. Do you have a favorite Janet Jackson song, Trevor?
I feel like it always changes.
Well, you think of that. I'll dig out a really deep cut that was not a hit, and I feel like always should have continued her run of hits, late 90s, early 2000s. Do you remember Every Time? Every Time. It kind of reminded me of Again, which had been a number one hit, but this one just didn't come anywhere near close to that. In fact, I want to do an episode coming up, Trevor, at some point, of songs that deserve to be huge hits but kind of missed by major acts. So Janet Jackson.
Kind of missed or missed?
That missed. So I'll save that for a bigger topic coming up. But yeah, great song by Janet. All right, I've given you enough time here. What do you got?
I guess I'll keep it in the spirit of what Childish Gambino started for us. I'll take a deep cut from the Janet album, which was the album that had That's the Way Love Goes on it. It's a socially conscious song called New Agenda. Just talks about the experience, a little bit of racism and sexism, but gives it a nice, you know, sort of upbeat urban twist. Also featuring our friend Chuck D of Public Enemy. So a nice collab there from them. So from the Janet album, we'll keep it socially conscious. Here we go. New agenda. Check, so check yourself.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.